When people open your new book, what reaction or change do you hope they experience when after going through your book and looking at these fantastic images of cats, if anything?
When Tim Berners-Lee was asked by journalists, having invented the web, what surprised him about some of the unusual usages of the web, and he just said kittens. Now, kittens are the second most frequent reason someone goes online. Now, going back to my brain again, so I've scanned my brain. Now, the reason for that was I wanted to show how the research on cuteness and how that relates to how we observe infant faces, babies, puppies, kittens. And they stimulate an area around the front here. It's the frontal cortex here. And this part is where empathy is. But adult ones happen somewhere around the side here. And uniquely adult, but the infants only stimulate the front. And they do that faster than 200 milliseconds. Now, for those who know something about how fast we have conscious thought, let's say that it's not 300, it's about a fifth of a second happens, you actually have conscious thought and understand. So you're forming emotions where you have conscious thought when you look at kittens. And that would explain why bypass, it's like a neurohighway. And so I think this is fascinating. So I was very lucky that a professor, a very eminent professor at Oxford University, came in to write the section on cuteness. And we worked together on that to deliver science into a book on cats. Now, that's not what you think. Or, for example, I have a clay litter tray in a cat book. Now, in my horse book, I had horse shit on this occasion, I've got a litter tray. So the question is, why a litter tray? We're talking about the clay litter revolution, which was to change the breeding of cats, catch them in the home, whereas before they just mated whatever they found outside. Presumably cats, but whatever cat came in the region. So the point was to disrupt the flow by having a cat litter in the picture that then begs the question, what's that about? Just as why has he got a brain in there? And how does that relate? So that disruption is quite important. Sometimes you need ambiguity. That is that you need a kind of multiple layers and you need to create a kind of confusion where you have to almost go through a disambiguation, that is unthreading the meaning to then be rewarded by going, that's what's going on here. That's what this crazy guy's doing. This is creating an experience. So one of the philosophers that's very influential in media studies was Walter Benjamin. Now he described the arts as the organization of experiences. Now I often think of that his thought on that. Because it begs the question, in what context, in what form, and how do you think what you put out will be experienced in the boots of someone else? What empathetic process does it involve to bridge something, to create experience in someone else's bony vault and the wetware that sits in it?
Sounds absolutely fascinating. And speaking of the kind of how dogs and cats have evolved separately in domestication or been naturally selected differently, how could you go into a bit more detail about the differentiation from, I assume dogs were used for hunting and protection, but why did we domesticate cats? What was the use of their domestication?
Some would argue that dogs, the domestication of the dog, because keep in mind that it was the wolf that they came from. So there's been a long process to get and considerable morphological diversity from, for example, the Great Dane to the poodle to the Chihuahua. You have all sorts of shapes, usually determined by their function or their jobs. Some would even argue that for Homo sapiens to get a bigger brain and get more protein, a collaboration with the dog worked well because they helped us alert us to trouble and they were good in pushing animals into our area to then in the hunt. So that goes back a long way. Now, cats is a very much more recent. Question is, did cats approach us or did we think that's convenient? So what we describe as hunter-gatherer in bands of people, we weren't collecting food. We were not farmers. It wasn't really until what we just they describe as civilization, where we went from hunter-gatherer to farmer. And in the Fertile Crescent, in sort of Mesopotamia, Egypt, that area, where first, when farming was established, as a consequence of that, you stockpile grain, for example, that brings vermin, and then you have another problem. And cats obviously thought, look here, I've got fat grain-fed rats and mice to eat here. This could be a really good opportunity. So it's very hard to know if we encourage them, or we discovered that actually they're good companionship. But really, it started not, there have been graves where they buried cats with people that go back as far as 7,000 years. But the most evidence really from Egypt, where we can see the paintings and the tomb paintings, and we can see them as part of the hunt and in the form of Raj, which is the sun god, which is a complex god. He's good and bad and whatever. And another one called Basset, which was a goddess. So they went from being, they became deities because they were seen for the importance of controlling vermin. Some would argue a ferret does a better job than a cat. And there may be truth, but maybe a ferret is not as good companionship as a cat. Doesn't purr, at least. I don't know. Whatever it is. But in answer to your question, the journey started really about 4,000, 3,500 years ago. For the most part, the cat's job didn't really change. It was for mousing, really. It was vermin control. And it wasn't really to, I think it really wasn't until the latter 19th century that people started having cats more inside. And really the breeds have increased considerably since the 1960s, going back to clay litter. From the period the clay litter came in, just adopted by a lot of people as a way of having cats in the home. We're really speaking of the 60s to around the 50s, 60s. Since that time, the registered breeds have gone from 6 to about 48 breeds. It has jumped hundreds of percent, not in the case of dogs. So cats, for the most part, have been left to be their natural form. They were actually the progenitor, or the cat that was the main genetic origin of all domestic cats, we can now establish was a Northern African wildcat. But when a cat spends a lot of time in Siberia, somewhere cold, they get a long coat over hundreds of years. And so we have big, heavy mancoons that in Nordic kind of environments, Northern forest cat and the Siberian are big, heavy cats with a lot of coat.
And what was maybe the most memorable or difficult or hardest shoot that you had to do for this feline project was, where did you have to go to get all these rare exotic species
that I had to do?
Yeah,
this is one of the exciting parts of being a photographer, is you can orchestrate your own adventures. Hope that is, you don't quite know what's going to happen. Well, there've been quite a lot of different ones. We've got certain cats which are so extraordinary. Some that have, we have one we call Zaro. He's called Zoo, actually. He has like a mask over his eyes. And he was in Borneo. So that was a fair way to go. And then we have another cat that looks a bit like a football, a kawaii kind of fluff ball. And he was in Japan. So we've had to go to some of these really unusual cats. There are some that are so surprising. They are literally half one color and half another. It's like a line drawn down the middle, like photoshopped. Because of that, we had to go down another route, which was to effectively document us working on these projects, because the cats are surprising in themselves. And as we enter an era of Gen AI, much of this will come into question, whether they were ever there. In the past, it might have been, how do you keep the cat still on set? Now it's, how do you prove it was ever there in the first place? We're moving through these are paradigm shifts as the visual lexicon, that's an oxymoron, but is changing, and it's changing remarkably fast.